Today's SWAPA number is 161. That's the average number of pilots per day that were JA'd to work on a day off in the month of August so far. We've seen JA records shattered this year. The most open time JAs, the most unscheduled overnights, or what we call RON JAs, the highest fatigue rates, the highest sustained reassignment rates, and the most food and hotel availability problems ever recorded.
So on today's show, we're going to talk with several SWAPA SMEs, including SRC Chair Scott Plyler, Megan Nealon, SRC Analyst, Contract Admin Chairman Seth Kornblum, and our Fatigue Specialist Scott Hutchinson. They will put some numbers to what our crews are seeing out on the line, talk about some contractual tools our pilots have at their disposal, and tell us about some issues our members have been facing this summer.
Southwest 1130 now, and have football at 27 right, list of takeoff.
All right, have football clear for takeoff, 27 right, Southwest 1139.
I'm Kurt Heidemann.
And I'm Amy Robinson, and here's our interview with Scott, Megan, Seth, and Scott. Okay, so when we're talking about JA, are we talking about true JA? Are we talking about unscheduled overnights? Or are we talking about both? I think I'm going to ask Scott, you want to start us off with that?
Yeah, well, SWAPA, we look at both the RON JAs. That's where you get extended off your pairing into a day off. And then also the straight up JAs. We look at both of those. And right now they are hitting historical highs on both sides, actually.
And I'll just add, you know, the first week of August, we were comparing the unscheduled overnight, so the RON versus the JA that went through the open time process. And you're actually seeing the open time JAs are exceeding the RON JA. And that's just never happened in Southwest history.
Yeah, the RON JAs tend to be, you know, the things from literally the weather disruptions. You know, you cancel a flight or some kind of maintenance, or you just can't get in and you time out. But the day off JAs show that we're completely out of manning. We're out of people that are bidding on open time, which we've had record participation up until now. But now we're starting to get that burnout, and people aren't even legal to be reassigned. And that's where you get the JAs.
When we say open time JA, something went through the open time process, had zero bidders. They tried to, you know, voluntarily cover it. They looked at reserves. So there was no way to cover. And that's when it goes to the junior available, where they start running from a reverse seniority, looking for the junior pilot online that's legal to fly it.
And we're seeing record numbers of that, but you're also getting the reassignment of those JAs because they can't even find somebody legal for it. And that's why you're seeing those double time on your legs when you get reassigned, because that's coming off of a JA that they couldn't even find somebody to JA for, so you got reassigned.
So I know you said historical numbers, but what are those numbers literally as of today?
Well, for example, so everybody refers back to 2015 as being the worst on record in terms of levels of JA. It was a very disruptive year. Looking at this first week of August, and by the time we complete the second week of August, we're going to exceed an entire year's worth of JA. So the first 2 weeks of August are going to exceed all of 2015 JA. It's astronomical.
Wow.
We just want to point out that we also look at the number of JA duty periods instead of just the number of incidences. Because if you get JA'd for a 2 day, you've lost 2 days off, not just 1 day. So we like to look at it not as JA events, but as how many duty periods you lost.
Now, Scott and Megan, I just saw some internal comm that was talking about now we're actually seeing JAs from JAs. What's going on there?
That just shows you how completely undermanned we are right now, that we've totally run out of bodies and folks are getting JAs coming off of like getting an RON JA and working an extra day. And then you get JA'd into a complete pairing off of that. But we've also seen a few incidences where folks have been JA'd for a day or two on a day off, and then they get JA'd again for a second JA pairing standalone.
Scott Hutchinson, anything to add to that?
You know, there is a provision in the contract where on your last day, you can deadhead indefinitely. However, max actual plus one is voluntary. However, crew scheduling will never tell you that. You have to know to ask to say, no, I want to have an overnight and then get 6.5 or double time for the return leg the next day.
Is that common in our contract, or is that something where the company is has an obligation to notify the pilot that they don't? Is that a contractual touch, Seth?
So there is no requirement for the company to notify the pilot. And the intent, allegedly, is because since we're talking about only the last day of a pairing, the idea is that most pilots would actually want to return home. The assumption is the pilot would rather just go on indefinitely because he's going to make it back to domicile at the end of all that. So they're not required. That's one place they're truly not required to tell you, because that's the assumption that you do want to go home.
And what we found in reporting, and sometimes when I reach out and talk to folks individually, they were very surprised by that. They would have much rather had gotten to a hotel, spent the night, because what they end up facing is sometimes a very painful 20-hour crew day. They might have been awake for 24, 26 hours, and now they're worried about killing themselves on their drive home.
Good point, yeah.
It cuts both ways, though, too, because if you keep yourself online, you could get pulled into a SkySolver solution that next day and end up getting stuck out there even longer and operating. So it's tough either way you call it. But no, it is very much a know your contract detail.
I'd like to go back. I want to talk about the conversation we were having before as far as JA and the company's methods of JAing pilots. One of the complaints that we know is it doesn't feel like it's junior assigned. It just seems like they're assigning whoever they can grab. Is that contractually compliant?
So I think the perception that they're just getting whoever they can grab, that's really a situation that occurs more on the RONJAs, where you return to domicile and you're expecting to go home and they tell you, you know, oh, hey, there's actually an airplane down the hall waiting for you. Those are not done by seniority. Those are by who's legal and available for that. And so if you are in position or you're scheduled to be in position at the time of their need, you may be sent out even though you're far from the junior pilot. So that's where people get confused and upset, because they think that seniority should have been utilized, but they just the company's process does not follow that, nor does the contract require it in those instances. But for the situations where there's a quote-unquote true JA or a standalone JA, where you get back to domicile and get notified you're going to start another pairing the next day, that needs to go by seniority. And I don't run into a problem with that. I don't know. What you see, Megan?
I mean, I used to work in crew scheduling, so I know that process is an automated process where they can actually pull up, you know, for a basin seat in inverse seniority order, and it will go pilot by pilot and look who is online, who is legal. And what they're hitting right now is people are running late for things. So by the time they start running these JA lists, there's nobody legal to report for an originator the next day. And that's when you start getting into all of this just massive reassignment. They're just moving people up at a little at a time to cover these things. But yeah, no, that is an inverse seniority-based process. So it isn't just a pick of the litter kind of thing.
So when can you actually be JA'd? What are the circumstances that would allow that?
Yeah, I mean, there is an order of JA, and it goes looking for people who are currently online. You have to be legal. There's new provisions that were brought into this last contract where if you're going to be JA'd, where it puts you beyond 5 days, you go to the bottom of the list. There's a few things that put you at the bottom of the list.
So tell our listeners how they can actually minimize the risk of JA, since it's so prevalent today. What can they do to minimize that?
The first thing is obviously to place your golden days off. We have the flex golden day off provisions now that you can actually place them, you know, in the month, you know, up until midnight, you know, the day prior, you know, so they actually have you can't do it like after they've already JA'd you. That's pretty much what the reasoning is for that. Other than that, most pilots are starting to avoid actually picking up open time, because if you're legal and available, we're so short staffed right now that you're very likely to get picked up. Some of the players are actually using that to their advantage. They're just getting themselves into a system with an easy trip trade giveaway or a daily open time that doesn't block very much, and then that puts you into the system and makes you highly available for a SkySolve or a JA.
And we'll reiterate that the GDO, the only way you would end up in a JA situation with your GDO is if you're unscheduled overnighted. So what Seth was describing earlier of you're the one who's available, who's legal to do it, but it should be on a last resort basis. But if you do get tagged, you get an additional 6.5 trips for pay just for that GDO. So, I mean, even just from like a economical strategy standpoint, placing those after your pairings, there could be a pay incentive.
Yeah. So, of course, you've got two types of folks out there, those that are looking to maximize the pay, but those who are looking to protect their time off. And so the GDO is very is a very important tool to use for those pilots that want to make sure to protect their time off. Just going back a second, when Scott mentioned the flexible GDO, remember that you cannot enter those in the computer yourself. In CWA, you do have to call crew scheduling. Once the bid period has started and you've called scheduling to place that flexible GDO, once you've done that, you cannot move it the rest of the month. Now, if you were to do it the old way and use CWA to place a GDO before the current bid period has started, that would be done with CWA. And before the next bid period starts, you can move it, delete it, do whatever you want with that GDO and CWA. But once that month starts, it's using the telephone to place that GDO. And once you've laid it down, that's where it's going to stay.
Seth, correct me if I'm wrong, but if I understand that MOU correctly, if you place it the month prior, then you lose that flex GDO capability. You're not allowed to move it after the fact. Is that correct?
Once the bid period has started, yeah, you can't move it.
I mean, not trying to tell pilots what to do, but it's almost works in your benefit to wait till the month starts and utilize that flex GDO capability. It is manual, so I mean, that is a little bit cumbersome, but at least you have some ability to move things around if your situation changes.
So again, the only time you get used on a GDO is if it's unavoidable. So if you see scheduling giving you a reassignment that's going to take you into the GDO and you found a way where you can get yourself back, make sure to give scheduling a heads up and tell them that you want to be returned to domicile on the way that you found. The other thing with that is, again, you always have the option to accept that assignment. So if the company says, sorry, you know, that's unavoidable, you still have the option not to do that flying on the day off.
Seth, I know we talk to our pilots and tell them, you know, we have 24/7 service for contract admin, but you know, send in trip audit questions and that sort of stuff via email. But is this the kind of thing that if it's late night and these guys are facing getting JA'd into a GDO, that's where if they have a real question, SWAP is there to answer those questions for them?
Yeah, we are there to answer those very time-critical questions 24/7. But what we typically cannot do is actually call the company for them in the middle of the night. Due to a long-standing agreement, we don't call into the scheduling floor. It'd be very rare circumstances where we would do that. So we will definitely answer the pilot's questions and give him the information so that he can advocate for himself. But we would not be calling into the scheduling floor.
And I'll just add that I think scheduling is very much in crisis mode right now. And if somebody's legal, they're probably just running with it in terms of notifying a pilot of a reassignment. So if you come across something like this where you believe that that might not be in compliance, ask for a supervisor and just get another set of eyes on it. And you could mitigate the whole JA experience altogether if you had that golden day off the next day and it's just a misunderstanding.
So let's go down the road of if you are JA'd, what are some things that you can do or what are the provisions around that if you are JA'd?
Well, I mean, ultimately, and we're certainly not encouraging pilots to refuse assignments for no reason, but I mean, ultimately, you do have to meet the I'm safe criteria. And if you are just absolutely just not in any physical or mental condition to fly it, you should not, and call in fatigued or call in sick as need be. Now, again, we've got to be real careful here. We're not encouraging pilots to refuse assignments unless there's a valid reason of them being unfit for duty.
Hutch, what would you like to add to that?
Well, you know, I think, honestly, our pilots don't really understand what they're signing when they sign the fitness for duty and the release on every single leg. And if you look at the circular that describes what that means, it says you are certifying that you are physically and mentally prepared to perform those duties at the highest levels of safety. I think that's a pretty high burden and standard to meet. And when people are dog tired, like Seth say, they're clearly not at that level. So it's an easy one to do. The unfortunate thing is our pilot group, and all pilots in general, but particularly our pilot group, has an extreme reluctance to make that fatigue call. They will want to find any other reason to get them out of the assignment before having to go down that road. And I think it's got a lot to do with personal pride, wanting to get a job done, those kind of things. And maybe it feels a little bit like a failure. But those who have not made that fatigue call, their first one is definitely their hardest. And we see it in reporting all the time.
Well, that's not a failure on our pilot group. That's a failure on the airline to properly staff right now. Can't keep falling on the backs of your pilots.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate, Scott, to hear you say that. No pilot should consider himself a failure because he needed to call in fatigued. He's doing the right thing to protect his aircraft, his company, his people, himself, his customers.
Yeah, on those lines, we surveyed the entire pilot group. It's been a while now, 5 or 6 years, and we asked a lot of questions, and one of them was, what are your top reasons that you decided not to call in fatigue when you otherwise realize you should have? And out of about 12 to 15 options to pick from, the top three were, I didn't want to inconvenience my customers, my fellow crew members, and the company. And the bottom three were, I was worried about pay issues, personal time off, things like that. So they really have a strong sense of mission accomplishment, which I think unfortunately works against us in this particular avenue.
Well, and I think it bears repeating, and Scott, you can back me up on this, that the SkySolver program doesn't have fatigue as a factor in its solutions. So it's just inserting additional fatigue more often than not.
Yeah, we certainly see that with the number of people that get just pulled into the SkySolver solutions that didn't have anything wrong with their pairing. It would probably be better to solve with one person than it would be to do multiple folks. And I know we've talked about this on other podcasts and, you know, in negotiations about all the things that they could have been doing over the past few years to try to mitigate the situation that we're in right now. But you know, here we are, and those solutions aren't going to come to fruition in time to help us out.
So, Scott, I know, you know, we've talked a lot about JA, but these JA events do more than just, you know, it's not just about a pilot having his day off taken away, but they also have, again, a lot of implications in terms of fatigue. In fact, I know you've said that the rates are like off the charts. Give us a little bit of a rundown of some of the fatigue issues that you're seeing.
So yeah, our fatigue are off the charts. We're seeing levels that are nearly double our worst level ever measured in our Southwest history. And in fact, it's only getting worse, not better. June was a record at 489 calls. July was 442. We're now on trajectory to exceed over 600 for the month of August.
So what's a typical summer month to compare those to?
Yeah, like a third of those numbers.
Wow.
That's a typical bad summer month. You know, obviously the WSI outage and the tech issues happened early in June. That contributed, but we always have weather, so that's not really the explanation. I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's reassignments, and kind of in JA is a part of that. Our crew members do not react well to reassignments. People don't react well to change. And they come without any notice. And we have a lot of unique things that are playing out now that don't happen in our normal fatigue kind of world.
So, Scott, another thing that we've heard a little bit, too, is, you know, the 8-hour rest period. And I know that we've had some issues with people being able to get hotels and even meet that minimum standards. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another issue that's more unique now than we have not seen before with regard particularly to late hotel or no hotel assignments and or transportation delays. With the record number of reassignments, it's overwhelming the desk at the NOC that handles these hotel things. Their title is called chat. And that function actually was taken away from crew scheduling and given to this chat office a couple of years ago. And they're just simply not staffed for the record volume we're seeing now. And therefore, our crew members, we're seeing record number of reports where they're describing waiting hours and hours to find out what hotel to go to. And the only answer they're given is just keep refreshing your board. It'll eventually show up on there. Now, the critical thing there for you to do as a pilot is when you have these extensive delays that are not reasonable, you need to ensure that you call crew scheduling because they don't know that you're having these delays, and ask to have your release time reset so that you are given a full legitimate 10-hour rest period so that you have the ability to attempt an 8-hour sleep opportunity.
Well, and I'll add, because we actually brought this issue up with flight ops leadership, I think just a couple weeks ago, actually, Scott mentioning that they took that away from crew scheduling and moved that to another work group. This chat NOC group, they don't understand FAR 117, so they don't even recognize that when they're notifying a pilot of their hotel and that pilot's been sitting on the ground for 2 hours and he was at 10 hours of rest, that there's a problem there. And that's why you have to bring that back to crew scheduling and bring it to their attention to make sure that you're not breaking a FAR at that point.
Yeah, and the contract actually tells you to have your report time changed, but honestly, you need to have your release time changed, not so much because you were still on duty, but because you weren't given any opportunity for rest. And if your release time isn't changed, with all the reassignments going on right now, there's very likely you're going to get pulled into something, and now they're going to reassign you into a move-up that you're technically illegal for with your rest. So that would solve that problem right from the start, and you'll actually get the rest that you're required.
And we have seen that actually in fatigue reporting, that exact scenario. So it's definitely a possibility.
And another way to try to head that off in the first place is if you're experiencing a lengthy delay and you cannot get chat NOC to assign you a hotel, source one yourself if there's one available. I mean, again, you shouldn't have to. It's a shame that we should ever have to. But you can avoid a lot of aggravation and the whole fatiguing situation and possibly the need to be pulled off an assignment the following day. You can protect yourself and the operation by sourcing your own hotel. The company has pledged in those cases that they will reimburse you. And we've not seen anybody have any problems with reimbursement.
And I know you've mentioned in the past too, Seth, that the same thing can be said for transportation if you're waiting for transportation for an extensive period of time.
That's right. Yeah, 30 minutes has been the what we've talked about with the company. And there should be no issues with reimbursement. We have had problems on occasion where somehow, somewhere in flight ops, they got this idea in their head that you have to ask Mother May I, that you need some sort of remark on your trip to get a reimbursement for transportation authorized. And that's absolutely not true. You don't need to ask for permission. If 30 minutes has gone by and you don't have your transportation, source your own and get yourself and your crew safely to your hotel.
Can I ask, because I've heard this feedback before, when they delay somebody's report the next day for, say, like an originator, but then they don't change the van time, so they didn't really address the issue. Can you request reimbursement in that situation?
Crew scheduling won't even blink at saying, yes, get your own transportation. We review these tapes all the time with fatigue reports, and they're actually very good about that. I think it's more of a communication problem, like Seth is saying, like Mother May I, and having it documented, all these things that really aren't necessary.
So last question in terms of fatigue is, Scott, I've seen you say this several times, but when you're talking about when you do make a fatigue call, and when the pilot does finally decide that that is the route that they have to go, talk a little bit about what happens after that for them.
Well, absolutely. That is probably where we have probably the most confusion with the process, because every situation is so unique. But the one takeaway I'll definitely say is have a robust conversation with that crew scheduler on what your options are going forward. Are they planning on trying to have you rejoin your pairing? Are they going to get you home? Are they going to give you must-ride transportation back to your commuter city? How much rest do you need? Do you need it now? Are you willing to deadhead now and get rest later? You are in the driver's seat with this. Crew scheduling generally does a very good job with that. However, sometimes they present only one option and the pilot receives that as like an order. I just have to do that without even being aware that they actually have many options that haven't been explored yet. So don't rush into that. Have a conversation and even take 5 minutes after you get off with them and then really look at it on CWA versus having it in your head. And if you want to change your mind, call them back and change your mind and come up with a different plan.
So, Scott, what's the outlook for JA going into the fall?
Unfortunately, it looks like it's going to continue. August has a little bit higher schedule than we did even in July. So we're going to be bearing through it for the next couple of weeks. Probably get a small respite in September. The block hours and the number of flights have gone down. We'll finally have all the X-TOWs that were recalled this summer trained. A lot of the ETOPS folks finally trained. And but we're still looking at lines that were, you know, over 91 TFP in September, where normally we're right around 87, even with some line guarantee. So we're probably still going to see quite a bit of premium in September. After that, though, the company has sold so many flights in October, November, December. They've even cut the schedule back and done reaccommodations. But those flight schedules are even more robust than July and August were. And only bring back a few X-TOW returns in October and then a few more in November. I think we're actually looking a little bit worse off in terms of block time per active line bidding pilot when we get into November and December. So unfortunately, it looks like the show is going to continue unless flight ops and frankly, all the other work groups that are getting JA'd and mandatoried overtime right now push back against what we think is kind of an unsupportable schedule.
Well, and I'll add that, you know, over the summer, the X-TOW pilots that were returning, the company was assessing that they would probably fly about half of their line, and really closer to 80 to 90% of that line got pulled and went back into either blank lines or open time. So that exacerbated the uncovered flying. And so they're projecting about 140, I believe, that they're going to try to bring back from X-TOW in the month of November when we're trying to fly a holiday schedule. Those are all first officers. So the first officer issue is going to continue.
So there's no discussion right now of bringing those X-TOWs back earlier and get them trained after they experienced what they did this summer with the delays due to training?
Well, we definitely made the recommendation to bring back the as many of the remaining FOs on X-TOW sooner as opposed to later, rather than doing upgrade classes. Doesn't seem like that's what's actually going to happen here. So we really don't have any good answers for why our recommendations are falling on deaf ears here.
Oh, there's been a little bit of pushback regarding available instructors as part of what's locking them down, but they're also upgrading a significant amount in September as part of the October vacancy. And I really feel like they need to flip that plan. And we gave that feedback. But to Scott's point, a lot of times it falls on deaf ears because those decisions were already made. And so they're not looking for input at that point.
We have pointed out a lot of problems across the board here. What I know we're not about just pointing out problems, but what are these solutions?
Well, that's certainly it. The big problem that we're having is that a lot of these decisions were made months ago. And even if we had made recommendations, and we have made recommendations since then, they weren't implemented. And even if they took them right now, they'd have trouble implementing them to solve this problem in the next few months. We do have a lot of things in our contract 2020 proposals that do this. And we've even been told by the company side that they want to protect the operation, and we certainly want to do that too. And it's not a mutually exclusive thing for pilots to have their quality of life protected as well as protecting the operation. We need to see better assessment of the training capacity. That's not just you know, how many sim slots you have, but how do you actually schedule that into the scheduling matrix? Because you can't do everybody all at once, and everybody has a footprint they have to follow. You know, just looking at how all that works with the ETOPs and the EXTOs, and you know, we had over 200 displacements in the vacancies, and that created a whole set of extra training events, and now we're going to be bringing back EXTOs and start new hire training, and that's going to start the churn through ETOPs as well on both the captain and FO side. So this was highly underestimated for the summer. We hope that mistake doesn't continue to get made as we bring back more EXTO and start the hiring and start up the upgrades again. We also need to see a lot more automation in the manual processes. Everybody's having trouble just getting self-notified of changes in CWA. If you don't have something that needs to be addressed, like a gate return, or you did a divert, something of that nature, you should be able to self-acknowledge in CWA. That'll cut down on the phone calls to crew scheduling, cut down on their phone calls going out, and allow them to focus more on managing the operation a little bit better. Things like, we've talked about last resort flying where, you know, somebody calls in sick at an outstation on an overnight. Well, you should be able to call that guy that lives in Tampa and have him fly, a premium turn out of Tampa in order to cover that, instead of doing a cascading reassignment of four or five pilots to get to that. We have complaints from pilots. Why am I getting phone calls at home? Well, if you could just sign up for alerts like we do our regular open time system, this is a proposal we've had on the books for 4 years. It would have really come in handy right now. Company claims this is all tech debt, but you know, when they were turning profits, you know, for years and years, didn't focus on this, and now it's coming back to bite them. Herb always said, manage in the good times so that you plan for the bad times. Well, we didn't do that, and here we are. Hopefully we can learn coming out of this pandemic and these situations to actually invest in our internal customers. You know, not just the pilots, but our schedulers are getting hammered too. You know, it's not for fun for them to be making dozens of JA phone calls a day.
And I'll just add that, you know, nothing that we've proposed from a technology standpoint is coming out of left field. A lot of these things, there's already mechanisms in place. So you're just repurposing or you're expanding. Like the open time alert system is very well designed, and you can expand that to cover last resort flying so that you can start tapping those local markets, because we hear time and time again that there's an interconnectivity issue right now since we're not fully recovered in terms of how many flights that we're operating. So it's harder on the reassignments to reconnect things when they break. By sending out alerts to local pilots to recover a flight, you know, like a Tampa originator, you could be saving money in reassignment by investing in that technology. And again, a lot of that's already there.
Seth and Scott, what would you say as far as things that we can do on the fatigue side of the house?
So I do want to acknowledge the fact that we're very well aware that a robust schedule is really a blessing in some ways. This is a great problem to have versus the problems we were having last year. The fact that the customers are back and the company's on its way back to profitability is a very good thing. And so we're very aware of that. And the things we're talking about, are here to further that effort and to keep us safe while we return to profitability. And so one thing that I would say, like I mentioned earlier, we've got to fix this food issue. That would be a huge, in my opinion, a huge fatigue mitigation and also a huge safety improvement.
Well, you touched on it earlier from a technology standpoint in the use of SkySolver. We've been told since the beginning of our fatigue program really coming to life that they had no intention of programming Solver with any fatigue mitigations in place. They didn't want to limit their options, and they're very happy with a large output of solutions. And so that would be our first, big wish list to pick the right person. We generally have people out there that can or want to do the type of flying, but there's a mismatch between who gets it and what type of flying it is. And a classic example is circadian shifts with PM to AM flying. Our number one reason why our PM reserve would call off fatigue is because they start off with a deadhead PM check-in on day one, and now they have an 0430 report on day two. That person is prepared and planning on PM flying, and to now tell them they're waking up when they were going to bed the night before is extremely difficult for many. We would like to eliminate that practice and program not just Solver, but just how crew scheduling operates and how they even assign reserves. Don't give that reserve assignment to that PM person if they say they can't do it.
And we're covering that in some of the contract 2020 asks as far as reserve open time and our reassignment preferences, right, Scott and Megan?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's an idea that, you know, some people want to have that overnight. Some people want to have the AM or the PM, and other people, you know, they're feeling pretty spry and they'll go for anything if it means, you know, you can get some premium pay.
All right, everybody, final thoughts?
I'll echo what Seth said earlier. We don't want to see the recovery stall. We want to see things get back to normal. We want to see the schedule get back to normal. We need to see commitment from the company that we can do this in a safe and sustainable way.
I'll jump on and quote our president. What Casey says, don't forget about margin. Don't give away your margin. Sometimes, unfortunately, we're the last stop in the whole chain of events. And particularly with when it comes to fatigue, don't let the FARs or the CBA limits press you into a situation that you shouldn't be in.
And I would also say, if something doesn't look right, say something. Don't be shy about asking a scheduler a question. And just be aware also that many of the schedulers are new, and they may not be as seasoned as some folks that you've talked to in the past. So if you need to ask for a supervisor for a clarification, do so. But remember that SWAPA is here. And our folks are very well seasoned in the contract admin department. Our staff is fantastic, and they can provide you with the answers as far as what the contract affords you for rights and can give you options that you may not have thought of. So don't be afraid. Reach out to SWAPA when you need us. And for those time-critical issues, feel free to reach us at all hours.
Just know that SWAPA sees what's going on. We get your reports. We have, you know, we're tracking all of this stuff, you know, not just from what you tell us, but, you know, we see it in the data that we get, you know, every single day, whether it's fatigue, reassignment rates, JAs, you name it. We see this stuff happening. We know that it's fatiguing out there. We know the reassignments are all nonsensical. You're having trouble getting food, even getting hotels, and then you're having to have, on top of that, you're having negative passer interactions. You know, it's real fun deadheading between two people that, you know, have been sitting around an airport for a couple hours or got canceled the day before. And I know you're tired of apologizing for it. Just want you to know that we're bringing these issues up. All we can say is we're trying to give you some idea of what your contractual provisions are, is what you can do for yourself. But the bottom line is right now you need to keep yourself and your crew safe and our passengers safe right now. You're being left as the last line of defense, and take that really seriously.
Our thanks to each of the SWAPA committee pilots and staff who participated in today's podcast. SWAPA's message is clear. We hear what our pilots are saying, and the data backs those concerns up.
Speaking of data, now's a good time to plug fatigue reports. As Scott Hutchinson mentioned, SWAPA relies on that data to push our message through the company's bureaucracy. Your fatigue reports mean the difference between one-off stories and the compelling analytics that SWAPA has become known for.
And as always, we want to hear from you. If you have any comments on this episode or ideas for a future episode, or even some SMEs you'd like to hear from, please drop us a line at com@swapa.org.
And finally, today's bonus number is 1,194. That's the number of fatigue pulls since June 1st, which is the highest rate of fatigue seen in any summer in history. And as our SRC said, the high schedule density will continue into late August, so the number of pilots making a fatigue call will certainly only increase.
Southwest 140 Mike Tiger, morning 10-10 at 10, runway 4 right, clear on.
Clear land 4 right, Southwest 140.